Please silence all electronic devices.
Representatives Brawley, Sain, Hastings, Martin, even Setzer, and Soka are recognized.
So the bottom line is, folks, there are a lot of bad people out there.
I'm Elizabeth Dole, and I approve this message.
You're fired!
You know, the guy that used to sit in this chair had a saying, if you think everybody's good, you ain't met everybody.
Any further discussion or debate?
This is the WUNC Politics Podcast. I'm Dave DeWitt, Managing Editor at WUNC, subbing in for Jeff Tiberi, our regular and esteemed podcast host. He'll be back next week. Today on the show, the General Assembly returned to Raleigh this week and got back to the work of legislating, or at least filing a flurry of bills, setting the stage for what will be months of debates and legal wrangling. Here to help make sense of what went on and what to expect are Jess Clark, Fletcher Fellow for Education Policy Reporting here at WUNC. Hi, Jess.
Hello.
And Rusty Jacobs, WUNC's Politics Reporter. Hi, Rusty.
Hey, David.
So the legislature convened a few weeks ago for a ceremonial opening, but this past Wednesday marked the first day of actual lawmaking, although not much really went on. Instead of really just sort of a flurry of bills get thrown into the mix, and then they'll come back next week to really start to hash some of that stuff out. So it's sort of not like jumping out of the blocks like on a sprint. It's more of an easy start, like a runner beginning a marathon. This is, after all, the long session, and if history is any guide, it won't end until July, August, maybe even later. But at least one item will be fast-tracked, a fix to a previously passed law that increased class size in schools. Jess, explain what law they're talking about, what problem it created for schools, and what the General Assembly may do to fix it.
Yeah, so this one's complicated, like all education bills.
Yeah, give us the 30-second summary.
But basically, so in the budget last year, legislators decided they want to reduce class sizes in kindergarten through third grade classes. So they put a cap. They said you can't have more than this many students over the average. So effectively it would have been, I think, like 19 to 21 students in a K through third grade class.
Because all research shows smaller classes are better for a learning environment generally.
Is that true?
Uh-huh.
Okay.
The smaller classes are better.
I'm sure we can find some researcher who disagrees.
Well,
but yes, that
but most,
yeah, most research does agree. However, the legislature did not provide any additional funding for reducing those class sizes. So that would mean that in order to get those class sizes down, districts would have to hire more teachers. And also, in some districts, they don't even have enough classroom spaces to put all of those students. It's because if you reduce class size, then you have more classes and you need more classrooms. So that was creating a whole bunch of problems for districts. So the School Boards Association was one of the big players in pushing legislators to say, okay, right, we agree class sizes need to be smaller, but you've got to give us some leeway in that. And so basically this bill just increases the, or I guess it increases the amount of students that can be in a class. So it doesn't, it's kind of like a meeting halfway between where we were before the 2016-2017 budget. So it just basically eases those classroom restrictions.
And it also, you can correct me if I'm wrong, but it also had something to do with arts and music classes, which sometimes can have a lot of kids. And if you just have one art teacher, for example, for an elementary school, which is not uncommon, especially in rural smaller school districts, those classes can be huge, and that can skew this average of kids in a class.
Right. And yeah, but I think the main reason they were worried about that is that in order to get class sizes down in, you know, the core classes, they would have to hire more teachers for those classes. And so what would
let
be cut?
Go, they'd fire
they'd have
the
to
music
let
and
go
the art teacher.
Of music, art, right. PE, the stuff that is that doesn't get, you know, tested.
Right.
So that's where that kind of that argument comes into play.
Right. And we saw some school districts who were pretty public about that. If we're going to have to cut art, we're going to have to cut music. And that seemed to get the lawmakers' attention.
Right.
And they're going to change some of these things. So
mm-hmm.
And that seems to happen. It's going to happen fairly quickly. That's not something they're going to wait to do, it seems like.
Right. I don't think that's controversial. And, you know, for example, Wake County, they want that done before March because that's when they start their budgeting process.
Right. Right. That's why it has to get done. So the other ongoing education-related drama in Raleigh is the fight between the state school board and newly elected state superintendent Mark Johnson. The General Assembly passed a law giving Johnson more powers than his predecessor, and the state school board sued. They've had a meeting since then. Everybody seemed to get along pretty well. Did you get a sense, Jess, in attending that state school board meeting, what the dynamic is going to be going moving forward between the state school board and Mark Johnson?
You know, not really. I mean, no one really brought it up or talked about it.
Nobody fought each other.
Nobody fought each other. It was no open fights. It was very polite, non-controversial, non-confrontational. But, you know, at the end of the meeting, you know, the school board members will go into closed session, and Mark Johnson, the superintendent, does not go into those meetings. So he's kind of, you know, left out in the cold.
Because they're talking to their attorneys about the lawsuit.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. So that makes for a very interesting dynamic.
Yeah. Right. And it'll be interesting to see, like, how that dynamic goes along. You know, a lot of times, this is not unprecedented. We've seen the state school board be at odds with the state superintendent legally before, back in the Purdue administration.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So in that instance, they got along very well, actually, during that process. And so it'll be interesting to see how that ongoing dynamic goes. It is also interesting that it is one of those conflicts that is all sort of in within one party. Everybody there of consequence is a Republican,
right?
And they all have very different opinions on how things should be working.
That's very true. And I think a lot of the I guess a lot of the reason why it's been so non-confrontational and kind of easy so far is because you've got Bill Coby as mm-hmm. the chair, and he's a very experienced policymaker and politician. So he kind of is able to ease all of those tensions.
Right, and he's not somebody prone to drama. He's not
right.
somebody. He's a very low-key, cool-minded.
Even keeled goes.
He is, absolutely. So, Rusty, this is your first go-round covering the legislature and your first appearance on the WUNC Politics podcast. Thanks for being here. Welcome.
Happy to be here.
You've been thrown into the deep end on a lot of these different stories, among them HB2. Now, of course, there were the special sessions in December. You came in after the special sessions, learned about those obviously pretty quickly, and followed them obviously before that. But you also, you spoke to folks this week about the possibility of a repeal deal between Democrats, Republicans, or between just Republicans. If Republicans wanted to repeal HB2, they absolutely could do that, but that isn't what's sort of been proposed. There's this sort of deal between Democrats and Republicans, and there's back and forth. Give us an idea of where that HB2 repeal stands.
I will. Let me start by saying I was in the legislature on January 11th, there for the opening ceremony, and there was all this collegiality. It was like coming back to school, all right? And there was, I would dare say, even a spirit of comedy. January 25th comes around, reconvene this week, and that's all gone. It was there for a moment, like Brigadoon appearing in the mist and then gone. What you have is you have Democrats like Senator Dan Blue, and you've got House Minority Leader Darren Jackson saying, if there is one place where we can find common ground with the Republicans, it is repeal of HB2. Just give us an up or down vote. We've got Republicans who support repealing HB2. Biggest economic development bill, Senator Jeff Jackson from Mecklenburg County says can happen, is repealing it. But it's not that simple. And Senator Berger was over in his chamber telling reporters after that first, after reconvening on the 25th, that, repeal is possible. But is there's got to be some compromise from the governor and from Democrats. And there, again, Republicans like Senator Berger want a repeal if there can be this moratorium, if we can see local governments being blocked from doing anything like the Charlotte Council did, which is come up with this, this ordinance that would protect transgender people and others. And I don't think Berger's going to move on that.
Yeah.
So even though HB2 is, by many people's accounts, the one area where there could be common ground between Democrats and Republicans, it's not going to be that simple.
Yeah, strictly from a political standpoint, and not looking at the law itself, but strictly as a political activity, this is unique in the General Assembly in recent years because, Phil Berger, Tim Moore, they've had the Republican votes they've needed to do whatever they've sort of wanted to do. They've had veto-proof majorities for a couple years. So when they've wanted to pass something, like they did with HB 2, they were able to pass it. The governor signed it, and it all moved along. It's a bit of a different political back, lineup now because you've got a Democratic governor, but they still have veto-proof majorities. So if they wanted a straight repeal, Republicans, that is, they could do it very quickly. Clearly, what's interesting about this is they don't have that within their own caucus. So they need Democrats for one of the very few times. For those Republicans who want to repeal HB 2, they need Democrats. And so they've got to work and work out some sort of compromise that they can live with. But Democrats are calling for a straight repeal, and they don't look like they're going to move on that a whole lot. So this is a situation that could have long legs, not just with HB 2, but if we see some cracks in this sort of Republican caucus moving forward that come out of HB 2 and can, you know, somehow move to other legislation as it goes down. This is really interesting for Phil Berger from my perspective, because this is the first time we've seen that kind of crack in the caucus. Now, they've been there behind closed doors and budget conversations and everything else. We know that not everybody agrees all the time within that caucus. But on this, we saw it publicly during that special session. And now it'll be interesting to see how that plays out. So looking not just long term, but let's look at next week. Rusty, what do you see happening when legislatures return Monday, and what will they be up to? What's on the agenda?
One of the looming issues is, in this special session, one of the special sessions, they enacted this law. So now the legislature has authority, confirmation authority over the governor's cabinet picks. I was in Senator Berger's office talking to one of his spokespeople and was told that it is a good chance we'll see a confirmation process, actual procedure put in place within the next week or so. So that's one of the things that's going to come up that Democrats and the governor have been asking for, even though they also think it's unconstitutional, where they're trying to fight that law. Nonetheless, they say if the law is in place, we need a procedure so we can go ahead and confirm some of these cabinet picks.
Very interesting. Jess, what do you think will happen next week? If you're looking into your crystal ball, education related, are there things that, beyond what we've already talked about, that will be taken up?
Well, I think at least in committee, I'm sure that both House and Senate education committees are going to look into a proposal to come up with a plan to change the way schools are financed. So it's a big, it's kind of the first step in overhauling the state's education finance system.
And that's a big tamale. I mean, that, you know, that's like tax reform. That's like Medicaid. We're talking about a complicated formula, a complicated thing that if you take money from one place or change something here, it's going to have an effect over here. So you've got to really understand the whole of that before you start tinkering with it. But it is interesting that that's what they're going after.
Right.
I don't remember recently big changes even being attempted in that area. So
And they do have, the bill to create the task force at least has bipartisan support. It's been filed in both chambers. So it looks like there is some, at least initially, some consensus that this is something that multiple factions of people within the legislature want to look at least.
Bipartisan and consensus are not words we're going to hear a lot coming up in this session. So it'll be interesting. Thanks, Jess. Thanks, Rusty.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to the WUNC Politics Podcast. A quick note on scheduling. During the legislative session, we'll produce a new WUNC Politics Podcast each Friday and additional episodes as events warrant. So that means if you haven't already, it's even more important to subscribe on iTunes or Google Play or wherever you get your podcasts, so you don't miss an episode. And of course, listen to all of our politics stories on WUNC Radio, read WUNC.org, and follow all of our reporters on Twitter. See you next week.